Hello and welcome to another edition of the Streaky the Lawn podcast. This is Caroline filling in as the host yet again for Pierce. He will soon be back, I promise you. And I can go back to hey as my intro. So I'm excited about that. But I am joined today by my good friend Paul. Paul, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great.
Damn it.
Stealing your thunder. Got your moves.
It's just the two of us today, so we'll just jump right into it. Paul, you had a kind of a big day today.
I did have a big day today.
You realized something.
I did.
Is it too big to say life-changing? Because I feel like it could be life-changing.
We'll say life-altering. I'm not going to say it's going to change the entire course of career and family and such, but it definitely, I was able to put a pinpoint on exactly something that had been unsettling for such a long time that it's mostly a relief.
Okay.
And that's, Luke May looks like Cavman. I have been the entire time Luke May has been at North Carolina.
So and like 7 years now?
Right, exactly. Yeah. The entire, 34 years, that he's played for Dean Smith and then Matt Doherty. There's something about Luke May that you look at and go, that's, there's the concept of the uncanny valley that when something is really, really close to reality, but it's just a little bit off, is actually when it's at its most unsettling. And there's Luke May's face. Just Luke May's face is right in that valley, and I couldn't figure out why. And then Tate Frazier tweeted out the Carolina team picture today, and sitting right there, dead front and center, is his big old Cavman head. And I finally figured it out. And I've got a thing about, I don't like mascots. I've never liked mascots.
People, what?
They're weird. I'm not generally like
none of them?
Like overt shows of enthusiasm, not a fan. Like it's not I think it's coming from my soul thing. Like you and Lauren have with, was it Purdue Pete and the Providence Pride?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
It's just, I don't like Santa either. That's a whole, we can get into that. But like mall Santa's not a fan.
Well, no, that's kind of
so I don't like mascots, but Cavman's fine because it's ours.
Sure.
But Luke May looks like Cavman, and that's why I've always found him unsettling, and I figured this out today, and I'm really happy about it.
I'm super happy for you. I still go with a young Kenny Rogers because that's just one I can't,
Oh.
Yeah, I can't unsee it.
Yeah.
But I did really appreciate it because I think what makes him look more like Cavman is the way that he does the beard.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's really the thing that, and he does have a,
it's the cheeks. It's the high, round cheeks that it's not, I mean, this is, of course, not the first basketball player Cavman overlap, given that pre current Cavman face, it was the Jason Kane look.
Oh, yeah.
A solid 5-10 years.
Absolutely. Not a good look, Cavman. And that's a knock on Jason Kane, though I will say that the stash of Jason Kane rock was not necessarily my fave. Did inspire the song Rock in the Stash, which shout out to my old college buddies, Nick and Mike, for...
Not that either of us were old enough to have been in college.
Well, no, definitely not. Definitely not me.
Definitely in our young childhood.
Same year as Jason Kane. And I definitely do not have one of the Jason Kane t-shirts where they're making me hand signals. That was awesome, though. Those were fun. That was, back in the days before the kids these days know how good they have it.
Yeah.
Being ranked in the top 10 every year.
Correct.
Where...
It's like, woo, top 25! Yeah. Large!
Where Jason Kane, tipped in that shot at Clemson. I remember I was late for a club lacrosse meeting because I was like, I'm not leaving my house because I have to see how this turns out. And... Kids out there, Google Jason Kane, greatest hits. He's fantastic. But yeah, that's a big,
very, very, very pro Jason Kane here on Streaking the Line.
Oh yeah, for sure. Brian, let's get Jason Kane on the podcast. get to
beef up our basketball
him down. Find where he is. But a little, some other news that came out today in basketball, and just while we're on the topic, as hope everyone is enjoying the countdown series, which is going on now. We are 4 weeks. I think we're at 28 days today at time of recording. Until the season starts, there are going to be a couple secret/not-so-secret scrimmages because they always get leaked, mostly by Goodman from the stadium now, I guess he's with. Richmond and Villanova. Paul, what's your take on those two not-so-secret scrimmages?
I feel like the Villanova scrimmage is getting to the point of being – it's like the Rocky Creed thing that there's like – there's always that rumor of the third fight. Like, I feel like there's these Virginia-Villanova games that everybody has – like, the two that have been played in the regular season were phenomenal games.
Great games.
Everybody's been wanting to see it as – you know, everybody – a lot of people had it pegged as a late-in-the-tournament game last year.
But then the tournament never happened, so.
Right, exactly. You win the ACC tournament, and you get to stay home.
Cancel the whole thing. Right. Yeah, weird.
So it does have that. Yeah, it's like now it's getting to the point of like the Rocky Creed fight after Rocky like tripped and sprained his ankle. Like there is a little bit of like how much weight does that still carry? Obviously, it's going to be a great measuring stick for this team. You've got. Traditionally, you know, year in and year out, the best offense in the country going up against year in and year out, the best defense in the country.
I don't think we need to tell everyone which one's which in this situation.
Yeah. hopefully we'll take some notes on how to have an offense.
all right. Easy. Buddy.
All right. Okay. Easy. I'm not allowed to talk basketball now. I've offended the Dauphin.
No, I think you're right. It's a good measuring stick. I think Villanova's the series I most would like to see them bring back. And then probably I want to keep going with, I really like the West Virginia one too. I think that's always a good barometer by introducing other styles of play, which is why I also like that Tony Bennett's committed to keeping VCU on the schedule at least frequently. I'd almost rather, like, while that one's cool, like it was maybe more cool when Shaka was there and they're a little bit better. Is that? I don't want to like.
No, that's fine.
Rile up.
I think you can drop VCU into a rotation of other other Virginia schools at this point.
Yeah.
You know, the lower tier schools like William and Mary and ODU and Tech.
there it is. I love it.
Yeah, there you go. But the point about like seeing different styles, I was thinking this last year, in the like myriad thoughts after the game that didn't happen. Is I want to see him play Marshall like every year while D'Antonio's there.
Man, I'm terrified of that game this year.
Exactly. But I think it's going to be so good for them it's the basketball equivalent of playing Georgia Tech or like playing Georgia Southern at the beginning of the year. Cause you know, you got to play Georgia Tech at the end of the year.
Yeah.
I think it's exposing how do we respond to that kind of style when the pressure's not on and we can make some more adjustments and it's a low importance game, but like a low leverage game. You can see how different pieces work up against that style.
Yeah, that Marshall one's one of the biggest ones I have circled on the non-conference this year, so it should be good. November 6th, we're coming up. The blue-white scrimmage is coming up this weekend in Charlottesville. It's part of the homecoming festivities in Charlottesville. On Saturday, that game is at 2. So if you're in the area for the football game, swing by, check it out. Parking's free, all that good stuff. We'll, of course, have coverage for you on Streak Milan after that takes place. But the big marquee event this coming weekend is, of course, the football game. We got a night game on ESPN2. Miami's coming to town. They have been doing very well lately. One loss on the season. That was when they opened up against LSU. That's obviously a tough game because LSU is good. they're number 16 in the country right now, Miami, 5-1, 2-0 in the conference. The Virginia is coming off of a bye week. Paul, they talked about being angry on the bye week. So like Bronco was saying that now his teams don't get sad when they lose, they get mad. What's your take on that? How does that make you feel?
I like that. I wish that they would be healthy during the bye week. I know you can't really practice that, but I would trade, 10% anger for 10% health at this point. Yeah. We've talked ad nauseum about the mentality change in the team and how they respond when the chips start to fall and the difference between here we go again. In the negative sense of, oh God, here we go again versus, all right, here we go again. Like we've faced some adversity. We know how to come back from it. So hearing the, we lost, damn it, we shouldn't, as opposed to we lost, damn it, that's all we know. Mm-hmm. I find that really encouraging. How about you?
Absolutely. I'm all for, I think you can absolutely see the difference in that mindset from year one to year two, and then especially also from year two to year three under Bronco and like what he's doing. Just the, like you said, the like shit, like the body language of the team and the way that they're handling things as it goes on. I think you could really see that last year against Georgia Tech in the game that they actually became bowl eligible, where Georgia Tech kept responding or taking the lead and Virginia came up with something. And at no point in that last game against NC State was there any quit, which is what you want to see, I guess. I mean, no moral victories, but I guess take them where you can get them. but I think that there's legitimately – there are no games left on the schedule that I think are not at least in some way winnable for this Virginia squad. Miami's coming off of a 28-27 win over FSU in a game that FSU led 27-7. Do you think – have your impressions of Miami changed coming off of that game, knowing how that game played out when it comes to, like, they fell behind to a clearly struggling FSU team this year? But
yeah, I mean, it certainly did. I mean, you've – to the extent – here's Miami's schedule this year. LSU lose by more than two touchdowns and should have lost by more than that. Then Savannah State, Toledo, FIU, North Carolina, and what looks like the worst Florida State team we've seen in 10, 20 years.
Yeah, it's not strong.
So, yeah, okay, they've been racking up 20, 30-point victories over a lot of these teams, but, you know, and the one time they got really tested, they got their butts kicked. So seeing them fall behind, I thought started to say a lot about the team, but also seeing how they responded and came back and beat a team that they should have beaten much more handily than that. But, you know, win's a win, a win counts. The thing that I'm hoping for is that that creates a little bit of a letdown scenario from the end of this week. I think the best case scenario for Virginia is getting up early or staying neck and neck until late. That if they fall behind early, I don't see Miami letting a team back in the game once they've kind of regained their composure a little bit.
Yeah.
But if, you know, if they're looking past, you know, looking past Virginia is not really right because they got to bye next week. But if their head's not entirely in the game, I think that's really going to give Virginia the chance to do something. Do you think it's more likely to be a letdown game or that comeback got them refocused?
That's a good question. I was thinking along the lines of I wanted this the whole time. I was like, I hope it's really emotional and hard fought. Because the other piece of it that I think is important to point out is saying, okay, yes, this is one of the worst Florida State teams that we've seen in recent history, but also it's still a rivalry game. And when it's a rivalry game, things can get weird. And there was a lot of that. So, like, you never want to discount a rivalry game unless apparently it's between Virginia and Virginia Tech, because then Tech wins every time. But you know what I mean? Like, there's always that extra people, like maybe the FSU kids get up more for that one, or there's just always some weird stuff that happens in rivalry games. I was hoping for like a super emotional, close game that Miami kind of eked out, and like maybe they won't look so hard at the things that they messed up on because they're so stoked about. Well, you know, Mark Richt is a professional, so I'm sure that he's not like, woo, we won, everything's fine, we have nothing to fix. But I think there's more of a chance of a letdown, and the fact that I just think Virginia's, when I say a better football team, I mean better than what Virginia has been, not necessarily a better football team than Miami. But you add in Virginia coming off of a bye and getting some rest and refocusing after a loss, having time to recuperate some of those players that were potentially injured. And Coach Mendenhall said that he actually spent some time in the bye week breaking up with some plays that he sadly didn't think would work anymore. So I kind of like that description of it. I think it was David Hale, the ESPN writer, who was like, oh man, if it's like other people I know, he wouldn't get drunk and text the old plays and see if they want to get back together. But the tweet was great. But yeah, I think that there's something to be said about like coming home and having a big game. There's going to be recruits there. So maybe not as much as a letdown, but more like Virginia, I think, is going to be hyped and ready to play this game. When you look at it, what's the biggest key for you, Paul, for Virginia to find a win in this game?
I think finding a way to hit on their big plays. Looking at the advanced stats profile, which we love here, UVA's offense is 18th in the country in ISO PPP. So that is of plays that are successful, defined by, I think it's getting half the yards you need on first down, basically staying ahead of schedule. Of the plays that are successful, how explosive are they? How much do they contribute to your likelihood to win? Or how many points above the expected do you get from that play? Virginia is 18th in the country. Miami's defense is 91st
Ooh.
In the same metric. So this is, you know, we've seen the big plays of it's get a guy in space. We've talked about it several times in the podcast, the starting to get guys behind the defense a little bit. It's been Tavares Kelly the last couple of games. We've seen Dubois be able to reel in some long catches, and Perkins really starting to develop a rhythm with those guys. So that, I think, is protecting Perkins against a very aggressive, very good defense. If they can protect a little bit, I think there's a chance that they can pull out a win.
No, that makes sense. I think that's actually one of the things I'm most concerned about is when I was watching that defensive line get to DeAndre Francois time and time again and really make his life miserable. And I think there's some – obviously, they have the turnover chain for a reason, and they – and I know Bud Elliott, our SB Nation recruiting guy, talks a lot about the fact that – turnovers are a very luck-based thing. There's a lot of things that go into it. It's not necessarily always something you can game plan around, like, oh, we'll just force turnovers. But limiting dumb mistakes that lead to turnovers is going to be huge. Like, we just can't give a team like Miami extra opportunities, would be, like, one of the biggest things. I'm concerned that I think, again, this is going to be played in the trenches. Can Virginia get any sort of running game going? Can they protect Bryce Perkins enough? And can they force Nikosi Perry to have to make plays? Because that's another thing. He's a very talented quarterback, but relatively untested. I don't know if that's even the right word to say, if untested is the right thing, but
no, I think
he's
that's
not
right.
The most accurate dude. Like, if you have pressure on him, he will overthrow the ball.
Yeah, they've got – here's a combination of things you don't particularly want to see with a young but are kind of expected with a young quarterback is a completion rate that is in the bottom 30 in the country, and a sack rate that is among the bottom 30 in the country. That means you're getting to the court, your teams are getting to your quarterback, and when they do, they're causing he's getting himself into bad throws and getting himself into bad throws even when he's not getting pressured. So on the flip side of protecting Perkins against an aggressive defense and trying to hit big plays, can the pass rush get itself reestablished for Virginia?
Yeah.
Can those guys that have been pressed into action in recent weeks, will another week of practice and working together get them to the point that they can put in some more exotic blitz packages like Bronco likes to run, and get after Perry and force him into bad decisions?
Yeah, and that's another spot, like, again, back to the turnovers, is this could be a good week for some of those guys in the secondary to pick off some of those ducks if the Snowdens of the world can make Nikosi Perry's life a living hell a little bit there, to really cause some damage out there in the secondary. I don't know. I mean, you look at it, and this is another one that doesn't necessarily need to be a must-win for Virginia. They're 3-2, 1-1 in conference, and all of the remaining games are still of the coastal variety. So they've played their two Atlantic games, and now I read something today where they talked about, you know, the biggest test for Miami coming up, you know, with Virginia and Virginia Tech as contenders to mess up their claim for the coastal. That's fun to read, and it's legit because you look down the line and you still have the back half relatively loaded, backloaded with teams that are very beatable with Duke, Georgia Tech, Pitt, North Carolina. Virginia Tech didn't, they made a bunch of mistakes against Notre Dame, and that was a game that they could have maybe done some stuff in too. So it'll be interesting to see. What's your prediction for Saturday night?
Ooh. I am hoping high scoring. Cause I think that's how Virginia stays in it. Is if the Miami defense gets burnt a little bit. So I am hopeful for a win. I am not yet confident enough to call it. Another result similar to the North Carolina State game is, I think, what I am feeling most likely about happening.
Okay. So do you still think it'll be a couple possession loss? Or
yeah. Couple of possessions, more than two touchdowns would be really disappointing. Less than two touchdowns would be nice to see. obviously a win being the what we all want to see. I think somewhere in that 10 to 15 point deficit is about what I think is reasonable.
Okay. Give me one guy on the offense and one guy on the defense that is your, or one guy in special teams you can pick, that is your like player to watch or player that needs to have a good game for Virginia to win.
I will go Ryan Nelson / Bobby Haskins, whichever of them is playing left tackle more. I come back to that big play thing that if they can give Perkins enough time, and that might mean enough time to get out of the pocket and reset protection on a scramble or on a rollout. But I'm using those two guys as a proxy for really the entire offensive line. But it's that left side, the young side, Perkins' blind side. Can they protect him long enough to get the offense going? So that's surprise, surprise. I choose an offensive lineman. how about you? What's your thought?
I actually think that they're going to win this game. But in a really like close fashion. And I'm only saying that because I thought when I looked at the schedule that this stretch was, there was a winnable game in here when it came to NC State, Miami, Duke.
Sure.
And I still think that's the case. I just have this really weird feeling about a ranked team coming in under the lights at Scott Stadium, a little bit more buzz, perhaps, like people getting excited about it. Things seem to be trending in the right way. They're going to have recruits there. I can't go, so that normally means I'll miss something really cool.
And I've been told that Brian won't be watching on television, which is normally our biggest key to victory.
Yeah.
So thanks, Brian's friends, for keeping him busy.
And so it's kind of like I've got this weird feeling, but I think it's going to be something like 35-31 or something like that.
All right.
But that's just, I don't know, we'll see. And I think Jordan Ellis is going to be a real big indicator of how this game's going. Might be a bit of a cop-out, but like I said, they just really couldn't figure out what to get going with him with NC State. And it's not a knock. Like, I'm not – they tried. I don't think it was a play-calling issue. I don't think it was, an effort issue. Just NC State had a good game plan. And then when it wasn't working, I do appreciate that they did not attempt to keep just trying it and trying it into the ground. And they found other ways for Bryce Perkins to connect with his receivers and tight ends and open some other stuff up. But I think that they need to figure out, or if they can get him going, I feel much better about how that game is going to go. And defensively, I just always want to go. I'm going to go with my boy Zane Zandier if he's getting in there and causing trouble.
Causing mischief.
Just like making people's lives miserable, then that generally means things are going well. I think that's what – I don't know. I think it'll be fun. I just hope it's fun. I honestly missed having a game on Saturday.
Yeah, it was weird. Yeah. It was very weird to be like, oh, it's not a relief from the misery. It's like, this fun thing that's been happening the last couple of weeks.
Yeah. My dad still made the joke.
Who knew that could happen?
I know. My dad.
No wonder how fans of other teams like this sport so much.
I know. My dad was like, well, they can't lose this week. I was like, that's true. The old tried and true bye week joke. I still love it. It's a good, it's an oldie but goodie. But yeah, I think that it'll be fun. I'm just looking forward to it. I think it has a chance to, there's no real downside. Like, they have a chance to make some noise and pick up a big win. And if they lose by 10 points, like, it's not the end of the world and no one's really, like, going to throw the, you know, write the team off entirely. So it's win-win. I mean, yeah, what could go wrong? But yeah, until then, I'm just going to eat a bunch of Halloween candy because it's almost Halloween. Paul, what's your favorite Halloween candy?
You know what? I'm gonna go ahead and stir this pot again. I'm gonna say Almond Joys.
It's not. Almond Joys is terrible.
It is definitely Almond Joys.
It's not. It's, you know, that is, it's actually not the
Butterfingers. No, it's garbage candy. Butterfingers. Yeah. I am come at me, world. At the UVA Fool on Twitter for loving Almond Joys and hating Butterfingers.
Here's the thing. That's Almond Joys are trash. Yep. One is the first thing. They're just not good. They're not terrible, but in the scope of candy bars, like, why would you ever choose Almond Joy? Almond Joy is the candy bar that's left in the bowl at the, like, receptionist desk, and you just are like, you know what? I don't really need a candy bar, and you just pass on it. You're like, I'm good. Butterfingers are outstanding. You just need to avoid the super stale ones from, like, the sheep on 29.
You need to avoid all of them.
Where, like, the wafer's a little too crunchy.
Have they manufactured any since the, like, Simpsons promotional deal with them stopped? Like, I feel like they made way too many Butterfingers until people kind of, like, phased out the Simpsons a little bit in, like, the early 2000s. And
then they just haven't made any more.
They've just, yeah, they have too many and can't get rid of them fast enough because they are, like, just tooth cement.
They're so good. That's true. It does get stuck to your teeth. Whichever season it is, I'm partial to the shaped Reese's. The pump, how dare you? The pumpkins and the trees and the hearts and the eggs. I think the eggs might be, the eggs and the pumpkins are probably my two favorite.
The eggs get the peanut butter ratio off. Like, there's too much.
No, see, peanut butter. I was gonna say, like, there's so much peanut butter. It's so good.
No, because it's absolutely. I mean, the peanut butter in Reese's is the direct quality analogy of the coconut in Almond Joys. The Reese's in the middle peanut butter is like space astronaut peanut butter that hasn't been mixed with enough.
No, it is the best peanut butter out there.
No,
God, you are wrong.
Oh my gosh, we have the voice of God here. No, it's the best. So, I mean, they did go too far and, like, they sell jars of Reese's peanut butter, which is, like, it's not even the same stuff, obviously. It's like,
yeah, it's good peanut butter.
It is the, oh my gosh, that is a thing that I will get, like, a bag of those. And only eat one at a time because I'm a responsible adult with portion control.
This is a court of law, Caroline. You are under oath on this podcast.
I'm going to look over sometimes and be like, ooh, I got to throw these wrappers away. So I feel better about myself. The trees are good, too. Oh, those are my favorite.
I'm a big caramel fan. I need caramel in my candy. I'm a huge caramel fan.
Not a huge caramel.
Well, that's why you're bad at things. Caroline, is
where are you on candy corn?
So I have to have some every year, but I'm not a huge fan of it. It's one of the, like, my grandmother either loved it or just kept a lot of it around in the fall. I don't know which one it was. I don't know, like, an obligation sort of thing. But there was always candy corn around from, like, my brother's birthday in early September to, like, well after Thanksgiving. So I would have chubby little handfuls of it fairly frequently. So like, I have to have some at some point during the fall. Now, if you start talking bastardizations of like the like chocolate candy corn,
oh, yeah.
the other weird stuff they do with it, no, I'm full out on that.
Yeah.
But a little bit of candy corn for old time's sake.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, I gotta get my dose.
I like to every once in a while have a couple of those like mallow cream pumpkins. But if you have like, there's a very thin line between like, yeah, those were good, and I might die. And it's like one.
Yeah, it's the line between one and two.
Yeah. There was a girl, this was back when I was in like middle school. She had a bag of them before soccer practice. And then did not die somehow. shout out high school metabolism, am I right? But yeah, if you go to assign candy corn to an ACC football team, which team?
Wake, because I probably experience it once a fall.
Yeah,
like,
and
that's,
it's not bad, but you know, you're not.
Yeah, it's
not,
I don't have really out. Strong opinions about it.
Yeah.
Like, and it. When people trash it, I'm like, yeah, okay, I can see your point.
But then you're also kind of like, hey, guys, he's up on the –
yeah, it's also when football. I'm making a list of things. It's the one that I forget belongs there.
It's the one I never rank in the power rankings. Why am I missing one? What do I do with this one?
I want to rate Carolina 17th. Is that possible?
Good Lord, are they bad.
Sneaky awful.
Sneaky awful.
Sneaky awful.
But also, oh, let's talk real quick just to close this out for the Streaky Lawn podcast petty move of the week. We'll add a new segment when Pierce is gone and then ask him to keep it up. Do you know what I'm going to talk about?
Paul Johnson beating the living hell out of Brian Van Gorder.
The Paul Johnson petty move of the week.
He's been harboring that for like 15 years.
It's incredible. Like, I'm envious of...
For those of you who might not know what we're talking about, Paul Johnson was the head coach at Georgia Southern, using that offense that he is known for, had made it part of their 6 national championships in the first 15 years of the school's existence. Paul Johnson, because he's a great coach, then gets hired at Navy, and eventually one of the next coaches at Georgia Southern becomes Brian Van Gorder. Brian Van Gorder makes a big deal of bringing the football program into the 21st century, going so far as to create an advertising campaign for the football team saying there's no option. Of course, Paul Johnson goes on to do very well at Navy, becomes the head coach at Georgia Tech. Brian Van Gorder went like 3-8 his first year, and very promptly flamed out as a head coach before going to be a defensive coach. Paul Johnson, while he was at Navy, tried to schedule Georgia Southern solely to beat the crap out of Brian
Van Gorder. And he even said that. Like, he was like, said, like, why exactly. Do you want to play Georgia Southern so badly?
Explicitly,
says,
for the purpose of doing
I want to kick the shit right. out of
Notice
him.
The timing of all of this. Paul Johnson is still the coach at Navy. It's before Brian Van Gorder becomes the linebackers coach for the Falcons. We are talking like peak Ja Rule, early 2000s Atlanta.
What would I be without you?
That's Ja Rule's not from Atlanta. Whatever. It is some peak ATL just nastiness. And Paul Johnson is the Mike Leach of option football. They are the same person that run completely different offenses, but they are the same person in pettiness. It was a thing of beauty.
So now Van Gorder is the defensive coordinator at Louisville?
Defensive coordinator for Louisville.
Yeah. So
Johnson proceeds to hang 66 points on it.
Well, and there was almost an opportunity for them to play when Navy played Notre Dame. And like something happened, like
that's right. That's right.
Story like 2 years ago about how finally
like Paul a Georgia Johnson Tech Notre Dame a couple years ago. Yeah, yeah. But
there was something else, like Brian Van Gorder left right beforehand or something like that.
Right.
So he wasn't at Notre Dame like when they played each other, so the beatdown could not occur. So then yes, this past Thursday, not only did they win 66-14 or 13 or whatever it was that Louisville managed to put on the scoreboard, Georgia Tech had 12 passing yards in the game. 12. Like two more than 10. And they managed to score 66 points on Louisville. Oh, how the mighty have fallen. And now everyone's
542 rushing yards. 542 rushing yards.
It's incredible.
That's insane.
The level of petty is something that I aspire to. Like, it's just so incredible.
It's so great.
And so, yeah, it's just kind of like, good for Paul Johnson. Louisville fans are now Googling what the buyout is for Petrino, but it's
too much.
Too much. So they're going to be hanging out with him in their brand new facility with no fans for the next couple years, I think.
You know what you could do, Louisville? Just shut down your entire athletic department and just blow in the cartridge and reboot, because you're about to get that with your basketball team.
Not great to be accepting or putting up bribes.
You shouldn't pay players while you're on probation.
Yeah. Anyway, that's more talking for another day. On that note, on the petty move of the day, petty move of the week, Paul Johnson, I think that's about it for this week's podcast. And like we said, Saturday night, ESPN2, I believe 7 o'clock, Virginia, Miami, under the lights at Scott Stadium. Check out streakingthelawn.com for all of your basketball countdown needs, as well as, of course, football coverage heading into the game and after. And for Paul and myself, we say goodnight. Wahoo.